Turn to page 24, the magic page.
Yeah.
This was truly the page that set me free. Top paragraph, italicized. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Have lost the power of choice in drink. Didn't say I've lost all of my choices. It says I have lost the power of choice in drink, in drug. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory and suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. That's the definition of powerless over alcohol. I'm without defense against the first drink. Which pretty much shoots a hole in that whole industry of relapse prevention, doesn't it?
Yep.
If I can keep myself sober, then this is a self-help program. And it's not. The book is saying, I am without defense against the first drink. What happens to the willpower?
Non-existent.
It becomes practically non-existent. How many of y'all have experienced that? You made a valiant attempt at stopping. I'm going to quit. You poured the dope out. You got rid of the alcohol. I'm not going to do that anymore. You with us? And 2 weeks later, your head starts to talk to you.
Yeah.
You with it? It does. You could probably smoke a joint. Yeah, pot. That's the ticket. Pot. Just drink a beer, Chris. A beer. Your problem is, my first wife used to say, Chris, the problem is that you drink too fast. She stole a stopwatch one time from Denny's, and they had that little promotional deal with they didn't bring you your food in 5 minutes, and you get a free deal, and she stole one of those little stopwatches. And she says, Chris, I'm going to watch you now. The problem is that you just drink too fast. I'm going to time you. We go to a party, and she dragged this clock out, this stopwatch. Here you go, Chris. Drink the drink. And I start to sip on it, and she goes, click. And all I could hear in that room, noisy, packed room, all I could hear was tick. 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 Jeez. Because I couldn't have another one for 30 minutes. You with us? She's going to time me. Oh, my God. You torture. This great line in the book. It's the great obsession of every abnormal drinker to be able to control and enjoy his drinking. I can't control it, but I damn sure ain't going to enjoy it. You know? That's what this is about. Absolutely unbelievable. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. So why do we have so many professionals? Why do we have any? I've never known a counselor, a doctor, a therapist, a probation officer, lawyer, judge, clergy, anybody that works on the firing line to try to treat this illness. I've never known anybody that wants to argue this physical piece. You alcoholics, once you start, you can't stop. It's that first one that gets you. It's the engine that kills you, not the caboose.
Yeah, that's right. Well,
that makes sense. Just don't drink the first one. Everything else is going to be okay. Put the plug in the jug. If you don't drink the first one, you won't get drunk. No shit. This is starting to crystallize in my head now. I see where I've been making the first mistake. I'm saying it again. I think it's disrespectful because these people don't understand. After you put that first one in your body, I know you don't have a choice. But before you put the first one in your body, you have a choice. And my book says exactly the opposite.
That's right.
But we got people in our own fellowships that don't even understand what's in the book. If you've got a choice, you're not one of us.
Right.
If you can choose to stop and make it stick, you're not one of us. I got to tell you guys, there's too many times that I went to somebody that I loved on bended knees and begged their forgiveness and said I would never do it again. And I meant it. With every fiber in my body, I meant it. I didn't have the power to pull it off. Because the further away I get from that drink, the worse I become. And my head starts to talk to me and I start to rationalize and justify why it's okay for me to put something in my body to change the way I feel. That's why we do all these stupid experiments of, you know, I'm not going to drink whiskey anymore. I'm just going to drink beer. I'm not going to drink beer. I'm just going to eat those pills. I'm not going to eat those pills. I'm just going to... Why do you have to have anything? I've sat and a hundred therapist couches and listen, Chris, you're drunk again. Yes, ma'am. Patch crooked. What was your first clue? Chris, tell me about it. Well, what? What's there to tell? I went to the 7-Eleven, bought a 12-pack of beer. What time of day was it? Noon? What kind of beer was it? Shaker Light? How much money did you spend? $2? That's cheap shit. It was big. I could tell her everything about it. Was the cashier male or female? Male. Where'd you drink it? Took it home. Well, Chris, obviously you've given me all the details about it. You could probably tell me what kind of clothes you were wearing when you bought. Yes. Well, you weren't some kind of blackout. Obviously, you chose to do that. She's nodding her head. This is called the assumptive close for you salespeople.
Yeah.
I went to the same seminar. She's nodding her head. Didn't you? You chose to, didn't you? Well, yeah. I guess I did. Well, excellent. I think, good. Give yourself a hand. I think we've had a real breakthrough today. That'll be $75. Thanks. Not knocking it. I'm saying people that don't understand this disease ought not to be working in the industry. If I could stop, I would. We start to drink, guys, and it's fun. It's just a hoot. And then years, months later, we're drinking and it's a hoot. But there's consequences to pay. You drink long enough, you're going to get to a spot where you're going to be just like what the book says. You can't imagine life living with it, and you can't imagine life living without it. And then you're going to know loneliness like few do. Can y'all get down with that? It's torture. I don't want to drink, but I can't not drink. It's a terrible place to be. And then they drop it back on our shoulders and say, we chose not to do it. Now, here's the kick. I have thousands of choices. I can choose to work these steps. I can choose to get a sponsor. I can choose to do what that sponsor tells me to do. You with me? If I choose to do the things that the book outlines, I'm guaranteed to get taken to that place of spiritual neutrality that the 10th step talks about and not drink and drug again. Of course, I've got some choices. But around the alcohol, I don't. I'm 19 years sober today, guys, and I don't have a choice whether I'm going to drink. I listen to people sitting in these stupid meetings. I got up this morning and chose not to drink. Screw you. It appears that you're choosing to do it. But what does that tell the newcomer sitting in the room? That's the stuff that took me to a suicide attempt in 1987. Because you can choose to do it. I think I should be able to choose to do it. We get taken to a place where the obsession goes away. Are y'all down with that?
Yeah, totally.
Here's the third piece. Here's what kills alcoholics and addicts. Some of y'all got these little issue man pens. I brought a little handful of them. I use these in lectures with the patients. This is a little issue man. Here. Or issue woman. There you go. So people are so sensitive about genders these days. It can be issue whatever you want it to be. The big book talks about a thing called a spiritual malady. Now, guys, I'm around AA for 7 years, and nobody talked to me about spiritual malady. They talked about the spiritual experience every once in a while. They paid lip service to it, but they didn't talk about the spiritual malady, the spiritual illness. And this is the underlying reason that alcoholics and addicts drink. See if y'all can see these symptoms, guys, because it really opened up my eyes to what this thing was about. The spiritual malady is described as this. Several pages, page 52 is specifically where it talks about the bedevilments. It talks about, in the doctor's opinion, how many of y'all understand irritable? When you're not drinking, away from the alcohol and dope, irritable. About restless. About discontent. Y'all ever heard the term a discontented spirit? Just not happy. Trouble in personal relationships. Any of you guys have trouble in personal relationships? How about the one with yourself? I had a patient in my office a couple of days ago talking to me. I don't understand this personal relationship stuff. And I don't have a problem with myself. Look down at her wrist and she's got slash marks all up and down her wrist. I says, excuse me? Bless her heart. damn sure does. We don't want to look at this. Trouble making a living. Not just about making money. What are you doing with the money when you get it? Pending it? Savings? Credit cards? Trouble focusing. The book talks about no sense of direction. How many of y'all can relate to that? We got 10-year-old kids on adult attention deficit disorder medication. I know some of them need it. A lot of them don't. A lot of them are suffering from the spiritual malady. They can't focus. Racing mind, symptom of the internal condition. Low self-esteem. Book talks about a feeling of uselessness. Can y'all get down with that? There's not a patient in treatment in this world that doesn't have that on their chart right now. So-and-so suffering from low self-esteem. No shit. Mm-hmm. What's causing that? Alcoholism. Spiritual malady. These internal discomforts are what cause... Guys, remember I told you when I drank that Boone's Farm apple wine when I was 17 years old and how good I felt? It wasn't euphoria. What it was it treated that internal condition. That's the pisser. Alcohol, I know it's causing me problem, but it's the only thing that makes me feel okay. It's the only thing that allows me to sleep. It's the only thing that allows me to talk to a woman, look her straight in the face. Thank God for alcohol. I would still be a virgin. I know that for a fact. And so do you. I got my first chef's job impaired. Not drunk, under the influence of alcohol. I got my first chef job at 20 years old. One of the youngest executive chefs in the state of Texas, and I got it impaired. I'm telling you, if the stuff was still working, I'd still be using it. Alcohol's not the problem. The dope's not the problem. It's the solution. And too many people don't understand that. So you ask them to lay it down, to leave it alone. And we do. Because we love you and we want to try to do the right thing. And then we get some distance away from it and we start feeling uncomfortable again. That's when most of us end up going back to the doctors and getting a prescription to fix the problem. Which leads us straight back to the alcohol and dope. Make sense? When I talk about this from the podium, folks, people misunderstand what I'm saying. Are there some specific mental illnesses that medication can treat?
Yes.
Without question. Is there a such thing as clinical depression?
Yeah. Yeah.
And can be treated with antidepressants,
yeah.
SSRIs. Yes?
Yes.
Let me ask you the question. Is it depression or is it the spiritual malady?
Spiritual malady.
We don't know. Because, I mean, that's we don't know. And until you get detoxed, until we can look at the picture clearer, you just don't know. But treatment centers, notoriously, what they want to do is we get there and the first thing they want to do is shove a bunch of pills up our butts. And then, you know, it's like, I mean, you go ask a little meth addict coming off of a run. I mean, I see them at the hospital. It freaks me out. They're just jumped, and they start to come down. And the first thing, are you depressed? No shit. Well, here, eat this pill. It'll fix you. Your mind racing? Absolutely. Here, eat this pill. It'll fix you. We're over-medicating people. I was taking 7 pills a day, guys. When I had my spiritual experience, I was about 6-7 months sober, and I went to a doctor with my sponsor, and we gradually weaned ourselves off those medications. It was the coolest. And I found out I didn't need them. You may be different. I'm not a doctor. If anybody hears me saying, I'm telling you to stop taking medication, I'm not. And you're wrong if you misquote me. I'm not. Some of us will have to take those medications the rest of our lives. Millions of us don't. Because the problem is the spiritual malady. Once this spiritual malady is treated, it says on page 64, we straighten out mentally and physically. Yeah? Let me run something by you. Y'all know on the steps... where it says in the first step, it says that our lives have become unmanageable. What does that mean? Go to any meeting tonight and bring up a topic of unmanageability and listen to what people say. My husband's leaving me. My job sucks. My car's, you with me? All external. The stuff we've been talking about is the unmanageability, the internal discomfort. Unmanageability, spiritual malady, untreated alcoholism are all the same thing. That's why this just go to meetings and don't drink won't work for real alcoholics. Because it won't treat the spiritual malady. What treats the spiritual malady, buddies? The spiritual experience. What brings about the spiritual experience? Absolutely. Absolutely. It's one of the things that we're going to be talking about a bunch tomorrow, folks. I know a lot of you guys in here are grindy about the word God, grindy about the spiritual experience. And I don't know what to tell you except that the book says on dozens of pages over and over.
God.
There's a power out there. And I don't care what name you put to it. I don't care what face you put to it. I don't care. It's for you. It could be individual. This program is so open and roomy. The arrogance of somebody to come in here and just refuse to even look at that freaks me out. And we only have one thing to offer, and that's it. I'll say this again, folks. Biggest thing killing Alcoholics Anonymous today is a belief that this is some kind of a chit self-help program. It's not. If I could have helped myself, I would have done it a long time before now. My book says it. We just read it. Mark read it, and we read how it works. No human power could relieve what's wrong with me. And if somebody is, I'm sorry, I can't relate. What are doctors?
Human resources.
What's the AA group?
Human resources.
What's treatment centers?
Human resources.
All of those help. They can all enrich and better my life, but they cannot bring about the necessary spiritual experience that will remove this obsession to drink. The little cocaine addict that cannot not smoke can be helped by some people, but that obsession will never go away until they have this spiritual experience. A very simple thing to happen if they will follow some instructions and do this work. Make sense? First thing that the book asks us to do with a newcomer is to give them a good case of alcoholism, to help them see their truth. It drives me crazy when I get emails from people all over the world who want to question this. I've been in AA for 3 years, and I'm not really sure if I'm an alcoholic or not. But that's a tragedy, because that's why they're not working the steps. That's why they're not working with other alcoholics. That's why they're not getting on committees and helping us out in the trenches that we so desperately need them. They're sitting on the sidelines waiting to try to figure this out. One day I'm convinced, the next day I'm not so sure. The book talks about a lurking notion. You've got to smash this lurking notion that somehow, someday, you're going to be different, that you're going to be well without this work. Make sense, guys? Absolutely. What we can do with a newcomer is set them down and qualify them and find out. What it brings about is the same thing some of y'all are feeling in here right now, and that's tension. It brings about some tension. Because I have to look at this. The feeling of powerlessness around this topic causes some people to get up and leave. If you leave tonight, if you will read on page 63 the third step prayer, that tension will go away. From doing hundreds of these workshops, I'm telling you, it'll stop. But to look at this it's not comfortable. When I'm sponsoring somebody, the first thing I do is qualify them. I ask them these questions. The book on page 44 in Chapter of the Agnostics.
Mm-hmm. Great chapter.
It is a great chapter. I skipped it for years. I believe in God. I'm not an agnostic. I'm the biggest agnostic you'll ever come across.
Yeah.
As my sponsor pointed out. If, top paragraph, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, power of choice, with us? Or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. Bill Wilson's trying to be very diplomatic. He uses words like probably and most, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It walks like a duck, quacks like a duck.
It's a duck.
It's a duck. It's it. It's two questions. But I'm in 7 years in Alcoholics Anonymous and nobody not once ever asked me those two questions. They said, do you have a problem with alcohol? The book never asks us to ask the newcomer if he has a problem with alcohol. It's going to be a theme for the rest of this weekend, for the rest of tomorrow that I get a chance to talk to you guys. It's going to be a theme. We've got to stop looking at this like once we get you in the room, we've done our job. Because we haven't. Now we got you in the room, that's good. Everybody can come into the room or go away as they see fit. We're not promoting this. We're not trying to jam it. We're not on street corners trying to drag people in. If your life sucks and you want a different way, we might have what worked for you. And we get them in, we need to give them the best we can give them. And that is to show them what a real alcoholic looks like. What happens if you talk to the guy and find out he's not an alcoholic?
Good luck, Charlie.
These steps are designed for living.
Yes.
Try some more control.
Here's my grind with it. I'm with you. Here's my grind with it. You got a guy that comes in and is not an alcoholic, and we let him stay here. We can't kick anybody out, not gonna, not ever. But we have a responsibility, I think, to the newcomer to help them find their truth. What if they're just a drug addict and not an alcoholic? And they come into the meetings because there's more of them and there's maybe more sobriety in this particular fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. So it's more convenient, so they just stay here. I don't worry about them being here. They're welcome. I worry about the poor, real alcoholic that walks in the door and happens to ask that cat to sponsor him. Now, the information coming out of this non-alcoholic's mouth could kill that guy. It's the same problem that we have with people in Narcotics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous. You with us? Alcoholics being sponsored by drug addicts. And drug addicts, and alcoholics sponsoring drug addicts. Treatment centers are the ones that started this. It's all the same thing. Y'all with us?
Yeah.
A drug is a drug is a drug. I've said this a million times, guys. If you think a drug is a drug is a drug, listen to a crack addict's fifth step.
Yeah.
Much different.
Curl your hair. No, I'm telling you what, guys. That stuff will take you to a place that most alcoholics have never even come close to. The shame and the guilt and the degradation around that stuff. If you've been there, you can help somebody else. If you've not, shut up. I've watched too many people in Alcoholics Anonymous literally kill the drug addict. You just sit there and chill out, buddy. It'll be all right. No, it won't. No, it won't. Because whereas an alcoholic will feel lousy enough to just sit there and stew for a few weeks, the crack addict, 3 days later, got him a couple of Big Macs in him and got him some sleep, will bounce back and start feeling great. This internal discomfort will come back with a vengeance and he'll be out of here in a heartbeat. Make sense? Try to tell a pill addict how to get well if you've never detoxed off pills. Oh, honey, get over it. It'll be all right. Don't worry about it. You ought to be way past that detox. Hell, you've been here a week. Those pill addicts are going to be detoxing for months. Months. Painfully. Pain like you've never felt detoxing off alcohol. Detox off opiates. You'll want to die. You can die. Detoxing off benzodiazepines. If you've got no experience with that, shut up. This idea that Alcoholics Anonymous can fix every problem in the world needs to be stopped.
Yeah.
Needs to be stopped. It's disrespectful. We were talking about it earlier. I'm going to say this and be quiet. I got a friend of mine that's a sex addict. He has done more damage to his family around that than anything you've ever seen. This is a tragedy. He's got an AA sponsor who's never had a problem with that. Now, how's this guy going to help him? How's this guy going to share any hope with this cat? I know the steps are the same. The solution's the same. But until you identify, that newcomer's not going to listen to what you've got to say. Make sense? People gravitate to me, chronic relapsers, because they can identify with my story. I have survived this crazy life so that I can use my experience to help somebody else. It's like me talking to a Vietnam vet. I've never been to Vietnam. How can I talk to this cat about that intelligently? I can be sympathetic. I can't empathize. I've never been there. Make sense? Mm-hmm. It's like me talking to a woman about being raped. I don't know. I know technically what happens. I have no idea what she went through. The best I can do as a responsible member of this fellowship is get that woman, get that man to a person that can help them. It's why in my briefcase, I always carry a list of other 12-step fellowships. If I happen to get hold of somebody that's a sex addict or a gambler or an incest survivor, I have numbers. I have websites that I can connect them with so that they can get in touch with people that know where they have been. The absolute arrogance of us to think that we can fix anything but alcoholism in this room. What's our primary purpose, folks? Primary purpose is to help the cat overcome alcoholism. If you're not an alcoholic, shut up. It's not funny. I'm being as serious as I can be. You're just talking out your butt. I know there's people that disagree with that. I've watched too many people die around it. That's why we have to qualify the newcomer. That's why we got to get them to the right fellowship. They're welcome in open meetings. But I mean it. Their sharing could kill somebody. Everything about that stuff's different. Detox is different. Physiological trauma is different. One's legal, one's not. Oh my gosh, we could go on all night long. It's all the same thing. Started by a treatment center that had one van. Y'all with us? Y'all have heard that before. It's the truth. Once I discovered my truth, after 7 years of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I landed in a room, and they opened the book, and they took about 10, 15 minutes and qualified me, it gave me enough tension to propel me through the rest of the steps. The book says that we each in our own turn sought the same escape with the desperation of a drowning man. And that's what I did. Because I knew if I didn't, I was going to die. Y'all cool with that? Mm-hmm. To allow somebody to sit in here and question week after week whether they're one of us or not. Man, the best service we can give them, the greatest gift we can give them, is helping them find their own truth. We're not on a membership drive here. If you need to be in this room, great. If you don't, let's find a room that can help you with your problem. Cool with that? Tomorrow, what time are we meeting tomorrow?
9:00.
9:00. We're going to pick up. We'll give you a little overview, and then we're going to slam through that work. You're with us?
Beautiful.
See you later. Y'all have a good night. Thanks.
Beautiful.
Good morning.
Water.
I can't believe there's this many people came back this morning. We're a sick bunch, must be. I'm grateful you're here. My name's Chris Raymer. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I want to kind of regroup and cover some stuff we talked about just briefly, and then we want to kind of slam through these things called the steps that everybody wants to make so damn complicated nobody can mess with them. They're not that complicated, and that's what I want to try. If you get nothing else out of this out of today, I hope you get to see this. I see step studies, you know, tape CD collections. You know, one of the first times I tried to get sober. It was actually after I got sober. Somebody handed me a cassette set of the steps. There were 32 cassettes in it. Guys, I'm lucky if I remember to put the patch on and zip my pants, you know, in early sobriety. I mean, I'm trying to focus here, don't you know? But 32 cassette, I mean, it's not that complicated. You can read the big book on 6 cassettes. What leads me to believe that we were adding some stuff. And that's what I want to try to stay away from, folks. You're free to come along with me here, and you're free to agree or disagree. I'm cool with that. A bunch of you guys in here had some great, I'm telling you, I was up late last night answering questions from cats, and I want to offer this today, unless it gets to be prohibitive. If you want to stop me in the middle of this tirade and ask a question, while it's on your mind, I'll be more than glad to try to answer the question. I'm not interested in getting into a debate here on the floor because we don't have time to do that. But if it's just a point of clarity, you know, I have listened to me speak before, and I mean, I realize I go about 900 miles an hour, and it's perfectly. I have been known to misspeak from the podium. I have said some things I've listened to later and said, What was that? You know, why did I say that? Not make myself quite clear. And so a point of clarity. You know, there were several of you came up after the meeting who were alcoholics and addicts. But what you heard me say was, if you're not just a pure alcoholic, you can't come to AA. It's not what I said. I understand that's what you heard. And I want to clarify it and make sure we're all clear. If you are an alcoholic, I don't care what else you got on top of it. Drug addiction, sex addiction, gambling, fried pie-ism, I don't care. You're absolutely welcome in our fellowship. Cool? We just don't talk about that other stuff in the meeting. I go to Fried Pie Anonymous to talk about that other stuff. So, but some great questions that you guys ask. And this afternoon, you know, we're gonna kind of float through here. We're going to take a couple of steps per little section. Some of these we've combined a bunch of the steps because they're not that much meat in them. They're pretty self-explanatory. We don't want to spend a bunch of time talking about something we don't need to talk about. But we want to get on. So later this afternoon, we're going to spend some time, a good hour, talking about the 12th step. Because I want to. A lot of you guys are asking the right questions with this thing. I believe that the people that are going to change Alcoholics Anonymous are the people that have got their nose buried in this book. And this idea to think that our fellowship has gotten so far off page that we can't get it back on track is rubbish. It's ridiculous. We can. It just takes some people with some cojones to do it. See, we was talking to some of the guys. You know, so many people have the similar experiences with me. They were around the fellowship for a long time, not being able to stay sober, in and out, in and out. One of the reasons of this, and I've got to say it, nobody ever intentionally tried to hurt me. I don't think anybody in all those years that I was in AA, from early 80s until 1987, after that suicide attempt, I don't think there was nobody that was maliciously trying to hurt me. They were all in the guise of love and tolerance and easy does it and all the other little chicken one-liners. They were trying to help, and I appreciate that. But they weren't helping. See, we've taken a perfectly clear message designed to bring about a thing called a spiritual experience. We just read it. And watered it down to such a spot that for the real alcoholic, they have a difficult time in staying sober in our fellowships. And that's my big soapbox. It's where I get a little cranky. I was in Oregon last week and the lady came up afterwards. She said, "Well, I agree with everything you said, but..." You know, they always, there's shit, there's always a but. But I think we should be able to go into meetings and share anything we want. If you have a problem and it's driving you crazy and you don't have a place to come talk about it, you might drink over it. You with us? And it makes perfect sense on the outside. It makes perfect sense. Except the problem is that everybody wants to do that. So the newcomer coming in to hear the message may not hear the message today because we're too busy fixing that problem. That's my only grind. Why don't you come before the meeting and let's talk about it? I mean, I got a bunch of men and women that surround me, and I don't mind if it's my stepson or if it's my wife, if it's my money, if it's my whatever. I've got somebody in that group that I can go to and say, "Buddy, I'm in the weeds here. Can you help me out?" But why is it that we think we can do that in an AA meeting? In the meeting. That's not the format. It was never intended to be the format. The formats of the meetings were intended to be so that we could study the literature work the steps, and have spiritual experiences. I go to meetings today, folks, so I can find new people to work with. That's the only reason I'm there. Make sense? I've been around a long time, guys. I've been to a gazillion meetings, and I don't go so that I can hear something new. This is not rocket science. Once you've got this stuff down under your belt, you pretty much got it licked. I'm there for the newcomer. Can I be of service to that newcomer? And that's what we're going to get to talk about this afternoon. Cool? Who's here this morning that was not here last night? So I'll know where the rocks are coming from. Oh, that's wonderful. We're so screwed. Okay. Well, understand where I'm coming from. It took me years to get sober because the message was different. Can you imagine how confusing it is for the newcomer when he comes into our meetings and he's detoxing, he's freaked out. Maybe he's just got out of one of the little jitter joints and he's coming in, you know, and he's got a little book, you know, because they gave it to him. And he's listening to the stuff like this. And here's one of us guys. Here, Ian share, you know, as well. You know, you got to work these steps and you got to get to them quick. You know, because you got to have that spiritual experience. You with us? And he looks across the room and there's this nice little lady sitting in the back. She's rolling her eyes like, oh, shit, here we go again, you know. And then she shares. Now, you know, my experience is that we didn't get this sick overnight. We're not going to get well overnight. You know, I didn't even start the steps till I was sober 3 years. You with me?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. The little guy shifts his gaze, moves over to her. All I mean, I like in this. I like. I'm not real sure about this urgency. It sounds a little rough here, you know. But this nice lady here took 3 years. You with us? Of course, if we could talk to the lady, we'd find out she's not even an alcoholic to begin with. She just doesn't have anything else to do on Saturday morning. We've all seen people like that, haven't we? And so the little guy, he's just confused. He gets conflicted messages. And that's why is it that Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob got together and they put these 12 steps together in the first experience of the first cats that got sober? They understood early on that the message in the first few years of this was getting watered down. Everybody was doing it their own little way and they only had their own ad. And they wrote it down in the book so that the flying blind period would be over, so that we could have something that we could go to as a touchstone. This is what the book says. This is what we need to do. Y'all follow? But everybody's so absolutely guarded about that. I'm working my program. That's what I did for 7 years. I'm working my program to the best of my ability. Oh, great. The old timers in 1987, after that suicide attempt, they said, Chris, why don't you work the program? Your program has been getting you drunk for 7 years. If we could just adhere to the literature, it's not that. 164 pages. The steps are outlined from the doctor's opinion up in the first 100 pages. 60 of those pages talk about the first step. The next 40 pages talks about the next steps. Bill Wilson really wanted us to understand about this qualifying the drunk. And that's what we talked about last night. When you put the stuff in your body, does a phenomenon of craving kick in and make you sometimes want to drink more than you intended? Yeah. And given good reason, warning from a doctor, change of environment, any of this other nonsense comes down the pike. Have you been able to stop? You know that morning that you went and looked in the bathroom mirror and you hung over from hell and you remembered vaguely the crap you pulled last night and you looked in the mirror and says, I'm not ever going to do that again. You with us? You meant it, but you drank again, didn't you? Textbook alcoholism. Textbook alcoholism. Those two words. Control and choice is how you diagnose somebody with alcoholism. Answer the same questions around drug addiction. That's how you diagnose that too. Same thing. Cool? Patients come to our hospital and we sit down and we spend all morning long talking to them about their drama. We fill out a thing called a psychosocial. We just get all the details about their life. I understand why we do it. We're wasting time. That's why I encourage the patients in that hospital where I work to stop telling their stories in that hospital. You can see them out in the butt hut. They're all out there smoking, you know, and telling their little war stories. But all they end up doing is pushing people away. Because if I haven't done what you've done, you with me? If I've never been to the penitentiary, well, I make a mental note to check you off my list. Well, nope, can't relate to him. Can't relate to her. Can't relate to her. You with me? I mean, the odds of finding somebody that has had the exact same story as me is slim to none. Guys, isn't that true? Now, I hear people in meetings all the time talking about this. Sooner or later, you'll find somebody that has the exact same story. That's BS. That's not true. How many one-eyed guys we got in this room? None? Well, I want to ask you the second question. How many one-eyed guys do we have that ate out of dumpsters in Houston, Texas? Not one. You think I'm splitting hairs? I'm not. When the obsession to you starts to use, you're going to use all of that to separate yourself from everybody else. So I'm just saying, let's focus on the solution. Page 17. We have a common problem, but that in itself is not going to hold us together. It's the common solution that's going to hold us together. And what's our common solution?
12 steps.
Black, white, green, blue, 19, 90, I don't care. Woman, man, gay, straight. The solution is the same. And that's where we need to get. Drives me crazy in treatment when we divide everybody up. We've got the young adults here. We've got the collegiates there. We've got the women there. We've got the duly diagnosed there. We've got the Vietnam vets there. We've got the black people there. We've got the gay people there. Why? Why? We're doing them a huge disservice when we do that. We separate them from the one fellowship that's going to save their butt. Make sense? That's where we were last night. They're still here. Okay.
You got them.
Somebody took exception with working the steps fast. In the book, it says we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Y'all down with that?
Yeah.
Okay. Why does that always translate to take your time to work the steps? When I'm washing the dishes, I want to be fearless and thorough from the very start. I want to do a very good job, but I don't want to take 2 weeks to do it. This idea. If you read the archival material, you'll see that all of these cats worked the steps in the early days very rapidly. I got a little excerpt from an article. I don't even remember where I got it. But it's some quotes, a conversation with Clarence Snyder. Y'all remember Clarence Snyder? There's a great book out there about this guy. It was written, it's called How It Worked by Mitchell Klein up in New York. You can download it off the internet. It's an excellent book about the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous. But here's what Clarence is saying. The newcomers surrendered in the presence of all these other people. After the surrender, many of the steps involving inventory, admission of character defects, and making restitution were taken within a matter of days.
Days.
Guys, ask any of the old timers that were around when Bill Wilson, you better ask them quick because they're passing away rather rapidly. Ask them how long it took people to work the steps in the early days. They followed you to treatment, guys. They followed you to detox. They started working you with the steps with you while you were in detox. And after you got out, see, they wanted you to get well so you could come help us carry the message to still more alcoholics. That's what this is about. And yet most of our fellowships out there, guys, I don't care what meeting you go to, there's a dozen geezers in there telling you, take your time to work the steps. How do we do this? Why do we do this? I'm as calm and collected in an AA meeting as I can be until I hear somebody say that crap. It is absolutely against what the big book says. And I come out sideways sometimes. I try not to. I try to be a gentler, softer young man these days. And I am. I'm doing better. I don't cuss near as much, and I don't haven't eaten anybody's butt in an AA meeting in a long time. But that still will push every trigger I've got, every button I've got. Let me see. You're telling me that the 12 steps will bring about a thing called a spiritual experience, and that spiritual experience is going to remove the obsession for me to use, but you want me to take my time to work those steps. Uh-huh. Why? There's only two answers to that, folks. Why would somebody tell me that? One, they either don't know the truth, or two, they don't have time to mess with me. Oh, honey, I'm so glad you asked me to sponsor you. I'm so glad. Listen, I'll be back in town next month and we'll get together and have coffee. Oh, geez, thanks. Sit down and get your book. Let's go. That's what we should be doing. There is a window, and I'm going to refer to it several times today. A lot of stuff has been written about it. There's a thing called a window of opportunity with alcoholics and addicts. Y'all heard the term pink cloud? There's no such thing. It's a slang term that people in our fellowship started using. This pink cloud is God's grace. Many of us in this room have experienced it. We screwed up our courage. We came into a meeting with us. We started doing the work, and all of a sudden, guys, I don't know what happened. I'm just 3 days here, and the obsession has gone away. You with us? It has. You're not recovered yet because it's not permanent. But you are on some good solid ground. Now, if you'll finish the steps, you will stay on that solid ground. If you mess around with this long enough, the obsession to use will come back and you'll get twisted again. Make sense?
Yep.
Everybody, guys, we hear it all the time. Oh, that little knucklehead, he's on a pink cloud. Well, he's happy, joyous, and free. That's the time we're supposed to be working with the newcomer. See, I don't know how long that window is going to be open. Some of us have a window of a week or so. Some of us it goes 6, 7, 8 months where it's just bliss. You with us? And then the damn thing shuts with a vengeance. If we're not careful, we get something cut off. Yeah? Bill Wilson understood that. That's why he was urgent in getting these cats in the work as quick as possible. You let them get detoxed a little bit. Ain't no sense talking to somebody that's ripped out of their gourd, you know. Just let them get their feet on the ground. 1 day, 2 days, and then let's start dragging them through this work. Cool? It's not any more complicated than that. You got your books, look on the bottom of page 43. From 23 to 43 are some of the best pages in the big book as far as I'm concerned. It talks about this mental obsession. What happens when the stuff's not in our body? Why can't we stay away from that first drink? It describes in those 20 pages the insane experiment of the first drink. You follow? And there's some wonderful stories. Jim, the car salesman. Fred, the businessman. This is great stuff. I love Jim. Jim, the car salesman. His problem wasn't anything other than he's an adult still drinking milk. That freaks me out. But it's this great line in there where it talks about, suddenly the thought crosses my mind, it'd be nice to put it'd be okay for me to put an ounce of whiskey if I mixed it with the milk. You with us? Everybody thinks, oh, that's so stupid. Think back at some of the stupid experiments of you've done, you know? Yeah. Yeah. I drank with a buddy that would eat a stick of butter before we went out drinking. Oh, this will fix me. This will make me okay. Oh, buddy, are you... He was real regular, I guarantee you that. But he never stayed sober. Bottom page 43, though. After Bill Wilson, they get through these stories talking about the mental blank spot that we go into. It says, once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. You with us? Guys, this is about as rigid as they come here when you read this. I mean, I flipped through this book a gazillion times and never saw that. When I finally read it, I mean, how can you mince words around this? One, it helps us to identify the exact problem. I'm without mental defense at certain times against the drink. There's sometimes I can have a mental defense. You with us? We talked about it last night. Relapse recovery. You with us? I can... If I listen to Led Zeppelin and it makes me think about doing dope or drinking alcohol, stop listening to Led Zeppelin. In early sobriety, it's probably a smart idea, if that bothers you. But are you really thinking that for the rest of your life, you're not going to listen to Led Zeppelin? What happens if you're riding in somebody else's car and a whole lot of love comes on? What are you going to do? Reach across the front, turn it off. Oh my God, it almost triggered me. Now, folks, because if you can't do that, you with us? The book says later on, we'll touch on it later, if you can't be around alcohol and dope, if you can't be around things that involve alcohol and dope, then you still have the mind of an alcoholic. You're not recovered yet. It's something that I don't think we tell the young people. We paint this picture, for the rest of your life, you're going to have to struggle against alcoholism and drug addiction. That's not my experience. That's... 10-step promises tell us we're going to be taken to a position of complete neutrality around the crap. We can come and go as we please. You with us? I was in a meeting at my own home group not long ago. I listened to a lady in there. She says, I've been sober 15 years. She didn't come around anymore. It's been a while. We ran her off. But she's sitting in the meetings and saying, I'm 15 years sober. You know, and there's just some days I can't go down the grocery store aisle. You know where they sell the wine and stuff? Uh-huh. I know. There's just some days I can't go down that aisle. 15 years sober. That's why I'm saying it again, guys. That's why we can't keep the young adults in our program. We keep painting a picture that this is going to be a torturous event for the rest of our lives. Instead of telling them, it will be like that if you don't do the work. If you don't get well, it will be a battle the rest of your life. But if you will do the work, you will be placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. I mean, I can't believe that you can't go down a wine aisle. You know what else is on the wine aisle? Potato chips. I mean, what are you going to do? I'll give up the damn tobacco, but I ain't giving up potato chips. I'm not going to do it. We get dropped into a cauldron. Second step. Third step we're going to talk about real quickly because it's just not that complicated. Depending on where I'm speaking, in certain parts of the country, there still is an unbelievable amount of resistance around this spiritual discussion. And we're going to discuss it a bit, but we're not going to discuss it a lot because I'm pretty rigid about it. The solution that we offer the alcoholic is a spiritual solution. Would y'all agree with that? If that bothers you, you might want to try a different fellowship. But don't try to change us from not talking about it because you're going to piss me off. And you're going to kill a whole bunch of people in the process. The absolute arrogance of us. This is what we have to offer. A spiritual solution. The entire program is based on spiritual principle. I talked about it last night. The whole program is so open and roomy. Second step. Came to believe in a power greater than ourselves. We talk about this power as we understand it. I mean, it's open as can be. You could be Buddhist, you can be Muslim, you could be the Jewish faith. I don't care what you pray to. Nature? Wiccan? We had a little guy in the hospital not long ago that was believed in voodoo. He was a little voodoo knucklehead. He had his little stuff. I'm not making fun of it. I just don't know anything about it. You know, but he had his little deal like this. And of course, everybody came up in arms. He said, you can't do that. You can't do that. And I stood up for it. Why in the hell not? I don't believe in it. I don't think it's going to lead him anywhere. But he has a right. Do we truly believe that you can pick a power greater than yourself? You with us? That's why I'm saying the program is so open and roomy. How can anybody throw rocks at us? And yet when we start talking about God, everybody immediately starts to say, well, it's a Christian fellowship. It started out as a Christian fellowship. You cannot dispute that. But Bill Wilson and these first cats understood that we were going to have some flack around that. We're sentencing most of the world to death if you have to be a Christian to get this. My experience is that when people work the 12 steps, they get hardwired into a power that's greater than themselves. And over time, that understanding of that power will grow and develop. And sometimes they come to the Christian faith and sometimes they get stronger in their own original faith. I don't know where it's going to take you. I just know it seems to work. Big falderall down in the States right now, but doing the Lord's Prayer at the end of the meetings. And I got to tell you, folks, I'm a Christian, but I agree with what the people are saying. It's not a Christian fellowship. It's a very open and roomy fellowship. And I'll tell you, for any of you guys in this room that bothers, if everybody hooks up at the end and does the Lord's Prayer and you don't feel comfortable doing it, we would love you to get in the circle with us and show your support and your unity with us. You don't have to say that prayer. Feel free to keep your mouth shut. You follow me? We must keep this open to anybody's spiritual path. I don't have a right to come in here and jam my religious beliefs down your throat. I can do it at coffee. You with us? Out smoking a butt. We can. We'll chat, and we will have an opportunity to give my testimony anytime anybody wants to listen to it, but not in an AA meeting. Y'all cool with that?
Yep.
Open and as roomy as it can possibly be. Well, what if you're an atheist? I would change my mind. Turn to page 44. 44, we get to start talking about the second step stuff, and he gives us a little overview of the first step. He talks about, we read it last night, if when you honestly want to, you can't find you can't quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount, you're probably one of us. If that's the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. You with us? That tells you right now that this is not a self-help program, folks. This is a God program. God's going to remove the obsession to drink. We're not. You want to look the big book up in the Library of Congress, you know where you look it up at under? Self-help. You pick up a Hazleton catalog. Largest, most, probably one of the most well-known treatment centers in the country. You want to find the big book? It's under self-help. Makes me want to puke. Alcoholics Anonymous stood by and let them do it. It's not a self-help program. Never has been, never will be. I can't help myself, folks. Y'all down with this?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Here's the sentence I want you to see. Down three paragraphs. But it isn't so difficult. About half of our original fellowship were exactly that type. Atheist. Agnostic. You with us?
Yep.
So if half of us were agnostic or atheist, what about the other half? It means they don't have a bone to pick with the spiritual solution. Let's look at it and go on. That's my grinder with cats that want to make more out of this than there is. Second and third step is open and roomy as can be, but you're going to believe in something. That's what the second step proposition is. Y'all know what we're talking about? Hang on. That's a little quick arch.
Cornerstone. Keystone.
You with us? Cornerstone. What's the cornerstone of the arch that we're going to walk through as free men? It's this second step proposition. Is God everything or nothing? The question is, are you willing to believe that there's something out there bigger than you? For the cat that says, no, there's nothing out there bigger than me, what else? What more conversation can we have? We can spend a bit of time with him. We can cajole him and see if we can get him to open his eyes to this. But if you're just completely resistant to the spiritual solution, what else is there for us to say? And yet we spend an inordinate amount of our time trying to chase these people down. Very simple. You believe there's something out there bigger than you. I mean, driving in from the airport yesterday, you know, looking at this city, Jesus, on this bay and these mountains and the snow and the wildlife and the parks, and it's just, I'm like, man, my God was having a good day when he made this part of the world. I'm telling you, it's truly, I'm a Texan through and through, but gee whiz, I'd move here in a heartbeat. I've never seen anything like it. It just, buddy, did I have anything to do with that?
No.
God did that, as far as I understand it. What's so difficult about that to grasp? How many times did you drive home in a blackout, end up in your parking lot unscathed? How many times did you start to make a left-hand turn and all of a sudden stop for some reason and a semi speeds past you on the left-hand side? How many times did God save your butt? Well, that was just me. That was just coincidence. Listen, folks, then we can't help you. That kind of arrogance, I don't know what to tell you. My answer to those people is, go drink. I hear people in meetings all the time. Guys, let's talk about this. I'm working on my second step. You come back the next week. Hey, buddy, how you doing? Oh, good. I'm still working on that second step. Explain that to me. It's one question. What is there to work on? You with us? No, you're spinning your wheels. And the problem is you didn't have a first step experience, so there's no urgency behind you to finish doing this work. You want to split hairs. People hear us say, what they think the second and third step's all about is, we got to get this all figured out about God. Guys, I got to tell you, 19 years sober, I think I know a little bit more about God than I did in 1987. I'll tell you right now, not much more. You follow me? I've grown a bit. I've seen some new things. God has changed me in certain ways that I would love to share with you. But understand God? My sponsor says it better. I mean, gee, what kind of a chicken shit God would this be if I could understand it? You don't have to understand it. You just have to ask yourself the question, the second step proposition. On page 47. I think it's 47. Is it? Do I now believe, or am I willing to believe, that there's a power greater than myself? Yeah, I'll give you that. Cool. Let's move on. You with us? I'm working on my second step. Flip back if you got your books real quick. We're going to read this real quick and speed past it. 45. One of the greatest little areas. Lack of power, that was the dilemma. Would you all agree?
Yes.
Lack of power, not just around the drinking and drugging. Lack of power around women. Oh my God. What are you going to do? You know? Lack of power around money. Lack of power around your health. Yeah? Lack of power, that's the dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how are we going to find that power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. How cool is that? Power greater than myself. In subsequent AA literature, about the time that the treatment centers started cranking out people and Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob and the other cats, everybody started getting real socially conscious about this. You can have anything for a higher power. You can pick that doorknob. I hear that rubbish in meetings and I'll shut it down in a heartbeat. I have power over that doorknob. That tree is my higher power. I'll cut the bastard down. I will give you a visual of how powerful that tree is. Some of y'all looks like you've just been slapped. He can't talk like that. Guys, we got to stop. The power is nature. I'll give you that. But an inanimate object, and I'm going to go ahead and say it because I'd be remiss if I didn't. If you think the group is your higher power, you are so in trouble. The group could get drunk. You're shortchanging yourself because of your arrogance. There's a power greater than you that created this universe, and you can put any name you want on it. That power is going to remove the obsession to drink. Understand this. I'm not saying that the group can't help you. I'm not saying. You have two things going on here. You got a program and you got the fellowship. Y'all understand the difference?
Yep.
The program is the 12 steps, the path to get connected to that power. The fellowship is what we do here. The fellowship is what we... And I tell you, I have been absolutely blessed by the people I've known in this program. We were talking about it last night. Guys, some of you guys I've been emailing for ages. I've known you via internet. I mean, and to finally get to put a face to you. I mean, the fellowship is absolutely wonderful. But the fellowship is not going to save me. If the obsession to use comes back and stays with me, I will drink. That little one I just drove up, that's God. I got to get connected to God. Somehow, some way. And it's the 12 steps to get me there. Y'all cool with that?
Yep.
Pretty simple.
Yep.
Everybody seems to talk about the spiritual experience being necessary to recover, but it seems like they're just paying lip service to it. Those guys in 1987, after we did this, they set me down. They said, "Chris, do you believe there's a power greater than yourself?" I'd been a believer all my life. Eating out of dumpsters in Houston, Texas in 1976, I knew there was a God. There's no way. How I survived all of that nonsense, I knew there was a God. But I didn't have access to God. Belief in God and access are two different things. Can y'all get down with that? Knowing about God and knowing God are two different things. You know who the toughest patients? That hospital where I work has been there about 35 years. And the toughest patients that we get there, we get about 1,000 better, 1,100 or so patients through there a year. The toughest patients we deal with at that hospital are very religious people. They're the because they won't listen to anything. Contempt prior to investigation. They just, "I know, I believe. Yeah, and you're drunk because you've got no access to that power. See, look at this. I wish all this stuff is blocking me from that power. A lot of cats that we get in that hospital, a lot of you guys in this room have had spiritual experiences with God years ago. But somehow along the road, you lost track. You lost connection with that power. All we're trying to do via the 12 steps is to get you reconnected to that power that you've known all along. You don't have to come up with something new and different. If it worked back then, it'll work now. Cool? Mm-hmm. That's what this is about. That's what this is about. Dozens of places that keep talking about being restored to sanity in that chapter. Wonderful chapter. Turn to page 62. Big Book talks in the third step. It's time to make a decision. That power that you're willing to believe in, are you willing to let that power take some control of your life? Are you willing to make a decision that you want to let that power in? It's a decision. That's all it is. This is the how and why of it. First, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. No kidding. Next, we decided that hereafter in the drama of life, God is going to be our director. He's the principal. We're His agents. He's the Father. We're His children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the key. Concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch which we passed to freedom. Y'all know the keystone? Mm-hmm. Top of the arch. You don't have a good cornerstone. You don't have a good keystone. The rest will fall apart. That's what we're asking you guys to look at. When we sincerely took such a position, guys, these are the third step promises. When we sincerely took such a position, the decision that we were going to let God enter our lives, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, He provided what we needed. Ooh, what a promise, huh? If we kept close to Him and performed His work well. What's His work?
Working with other
carrying the message, working with other alcoholics. That's what it's saying. If I'll keep giving to you, God will keep giving to me. That's the promise. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of His, her, its presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. Jesus, guys, you know what a gift it is to come into Alcoholics Anonymous and realize that I can get connected to a power that makes it perfectly okay for me to say anytime, any place, "I don't know. I don't have an answer for you. I don't have a clue. I don't have to have all the answers anymore." Y'all down with that? I don't have to have it all figured out. I don't have to be Johnny on the spot every day. I have something to fall back on. I have something to depend on. It's pretty powerful, pretty freeing moment. We're now at step three, but I'm bummed. Many of us said to our makers, we understood him. Prayer is absolutely optional how you say it, but it's pretty general in what it's asking us to say. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Y'all understand that?
Yeah.
Guys, build with me and do with me as you wilt. See, when my will... Here. My will. My will and God's will. When those things are in alignment, life is groovy. It is good. It's when I get in conflict that things start getting crappy. You with us? How many of you guys have ever done something that you knew damn good and well in your head and in your heart was the wrong thing to do? But you did it anyway. You just frogged right on down in there and just did it. You with us? And how uncomfortable you were before you did it and why you were doing it and after you did it. Why? Because you went exactly against God's will. Guys, see, knowing God's will and doing God's will are two damn different things. The most fried-pied little knucklehead in this room today, the one of you that's the most affected by the alcohol and dope, I can guarantee you, if you've been around these rooms for a few weeks, you already know what God wants you to do. And so many of you, that's the conflict that you're feeling in your life right now, is that you won't do what God has asked you to do. You know what you're supposed to do, but you've decided, you've chosen not to do it. Yeah? What a pisser. I mean, that's tough. And then you get loaded and then you want to blame somebody else for it. What's the truth? You weren't living on spiritual principles. But I want to go out with her. Chris, you're married. But... And I'll lay awake at night and rationalize, you know, this rat cage. Well, if she treated me better, I wouldn't even be thinking about you. You with us? All right. It says, offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self. You know where that line comes from, right? Bondage of self. On the page right in front of it, you don't have to turn the page. Just look to your left. It says, selfish and self-centeredness. Exclamation point. That we think is the root of our troubles. Would y'all agree with that?
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, it offended me when I got to these rooms. No, cocaine's my problem. Alcohol's my problem. No. Selfish and self-centeredness is my problem. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. Here's my favorite. And self-pity. I'm a master at it, guys. I've got V tattooed on my chest even as we speak. I am the master victim. I have learned to work it as an art form. You wouldn't want to go out with a one-eyed guy, would you? And that's like I said last, and most of them is absolutely not. But there'll be one in every crowd. Oh, baby, I think that's sexy. Come to mama. Okay. She's usually not real pretty, but what the hell, you know? You gotta work it. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation. But we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later place us in a position to be hurt. You with us? Any of you guys ever hook up with one of these crazy women in AA? Drop dead gorgeous? Psycho? What is it about us? Yeah, I can walk across this room, the coolest, kindest, most spiritual-filled women in the room, and I will walk over you to get to the one certified psychopath in the room. I use that as a graphic example. You're not a psychopath sitting in the back of the room. That's, but y'all, what is that about? Unbelievable. And then when she goes south on me, it's crazy. She's messing with my best friend 2 days later, and I'm thinking, how'd she hurt me? Wait a minute. You knew going in the door. Oh, Jesus. And then I got some fodder to be a victim the rest of the week, you know, around that. I just need to talk to you about her. Oh. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. And the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, y'all read this, mark it. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. You can't skip that piece. We've got to get rid of this selfish and self-centeredness, folks. And the book says there's only one way to do that. And that's through growing spiritually, through work and self-sacrifice for others. If I'm working with another drunk, trust me, I will not be thinking about myself for that hour that I'm sitting down talking to that cat. And any time I can spend outside my hell, my little head, the better it's going to be. Y'all cool with that, aren't you?
Yeah.
This is what the prayer said. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Didn't say, relieve me of the bondage of crack cocaine. Because that's not your problem. Selfish and self-centeredness is your problem. Yeah? Some of y'all are going to stew on this all day. That's okay. But I think you'll find it's the truth. That I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties. One of the greatest promises in the book. Take away my difficulties that victory over them can bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. No amen. It's a continuation to step 7 when we do an amen after the 7-step prayer. Mm-hmm. It was intended to be worked all at once. Boom, 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 boom. Take away my difficulties that victory over them can bear witness to those I would help. That's what meetings were all about. Meetings where we could go back into these rooms and share hope with the newcomer. You with us? These fellowships, they've turned into these little pissing, moaning groups where all we do is go talk about our problem. How is that pulling the newcomer with a vision? I hear people all the time, they send me emails, Chris, well, we got to get honest in meetings. We have to share where we're at. You have to share where you're at. I'm just saying you don't have to do it in a meeting. Can you be humble? Yes. Guys, you know what the definition of humility is? It's not walking around looking at the ground, holding your hat in your hand. I'm a humble alcoholic. That's not it. Humility is knowing where the power of God, what the power of God is doing for you. Where your power comes from. You with us? Some of y'all have tried to talk to me away from this podium. I am quiet and shy. You'd think, how in the hell can he do this 40 weekends out of the year? But when I talk to him one-on-one or on the phone, he just seems so distant. I am. Painfully shy. Until I get up here talking about this particular subject. You with us? You got to go back into meetings, folks, and share some hope. I hear people in meetings, the newcomer says, well, I'm sober today, and you know, I think this is a pretty cool deal. Thank you. You with us? Now that's power. That's powerful. You got some idiot that's been sober 10 years and all they want to do is come in and talk about their day? That's not powerful. That's being selfish and self-centered one more time. There's a difference between sharing and dumping. If you can't share some hope, shut up. Yeah, and I said it.
Yeah.
And I meant it. If you can't pull the newcomer with a vision, shut up. You got nothing to share. If you're in a bad spot, let somebody know. We'll come before the meeting or after the meeting and we'll talk about that all day long. I know what it's like to come to a meeting and not be in a good spot and need to talk to somebody. I'm down with that. But in a meeting, guys, people jamming me all the time. Well, you think these meetings ought to all be pep rallies? Yeah, I do. I'd rather see you cats in this room right now going to 3 pep rallies a week than to go into to 10 meetings where you just want to pull your hair out. I need to get fed. I'm not going to get fed listening to you talk about your crap.